Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Halloween time has arrived at the resort. We have all the details and updates from previous years.
San Francisco has officially opened. A good change for the Mint Julep Bar. We talked to Disney Imagineer and artist Eric Robinson and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Tag and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of September 6, 2023. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tag Bushman. We'd like to thank all of the current weekly tiers, including Nicole D., Kevin R., Keith N., and David V. for supporting the show. Without your support, DL Weekly would not be possible. Your support ensures that the podcast will continue and we can make it to the parks more often to bring you the latest news and information direct from the parks. If you'd like to become an official weekly tier, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Well, you've heard us talk about our great experiences staying at the Howard Johnson in Anaheim. Well, we have partnered with them to offer our listeners some very cool discounts. Weekly tiers can get 15% off their stay, and Magic Keyholder weekly tiers can get 20% off. To take advantage of these discounts, head on over to dlweekly.net and click on the Howard Johnson logo. Be sure to use the promo codes on the site to get the discount that you qualify for.
It's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello everyone, this is Eric Johnson with Concierge and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland in the D180, we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We start our journey in Walt Disney World, where once again you can spice up your resort hotel stay with some extra fun. Magical Floral and Gifts is Disney's new provider for adding flowers, balloons, and decorations to your room. Need to celebrate a birthday? They have you covered with birthday baskets and balloons. Pick a floral arrangement like the Polynesian to add a little extra life to your room. Additional snack basket and balloon packages add some classic Disney fun with Mickey and Minnie Mouse heavily represented. You can add any of their packages to your stay by calling in or visiting their website at magicalfloralandgifts.com. If this company is anything like Disney's last provider, they're going to continue expanding their offerings to cater to every type of vacationer possible. Well, hey, let's head across the Atlantic to Disneyland Paris. If you're into fantastic spectacles and spectacular festivals, you're going to love their recent announcements. Disneyland Paris is prepared for a great year. Spooky season returns to the parks again from October 1st through November 5th. Their season is a little shorter than those we have around here, but the Parisians know how to have some fun. Join Mickey, Minnie, and friends with a new cavalcade down the streets of the park. They're all going to be wearing their best outfits this year, and I can't wait to find out what they picked. Hang out into the evening and shiver as the Disney villains take over Sleeping Beauty Castle. Those villains put on a great show before the nightly Disney Dream Spectacular. And for further spookiness, follow the Happy Haunts across the way into Walt Disney Studios Park. Yes, in case you didn't know, Paris has two parks just like Disneyland. So head across that esplanade into the Studios Park to continue the fun. The park will also have extra decorations this year, along with the kinds of food, merch, and Halloween characters we love here in the States. Stick around for a bit, though, if you have the time. On October 16th, the Paris parks join the Disney 100 celebration for one action-packed day. Yes, this celebration starts on October 16th and ends also on October 16th, but what a day! Paris will celebrate with special shows, parades, fireworks, food, and even some sort of celebration involving the park blowing out 100 candles all at once. I can't wait to see how this pans out. Huh, well, that probably wasn't enough to back my initial premise about so much going on at Paris. Well, how about we head into the holiday season, which runs from November 11th through January 7th. Disneyland Paris will install their biggest tree ever, measuring 24 meters high. Wow, that's nearly 79 feet, people. It's an impressive 19 feet higher than the one that Disneyland usually has in place. Through January and February, Disneyland Paris will roll out new nighttime spectaculars and castle shows featuring colorful projections and fireworks, your favorite Disney characters, dazzling fountains, and astounding drone work in the sky. And that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you'd like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Thanks, Eric.
Now let's get to the news.
Well, Halloween has arrived at the Disneyland Resort, and that means some new updates to Haunted Mansion Holiday. There is a fish biscuit treat for the one-eyed cat statue, and a new Candleman figure in the attic scene that is a nod to the Disney legend and Imagineer Rolly Crump from the Museum of the Weird concept, which the Haunted Mansion eventually became. Of course, the Gingerbread House theme is new, depicting a new ghostly resident. What do you know about... Two questions, because I don't know two of these things. One... What is the new gingerbread house?
The new gingerbread house is, it's like a mausoleum. So it's kind of, it's interesting because in the more previous recent years, it's had something to do with the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
No, well, like the Haunted Mansion, but also the Nightmare Before Christmas is what I'm trying to say. But this is kind of its own unique concept. So I feel like there might be a story within this, or, you know, a new story that we're going to learn about this character, but it's not a character that we've seen before, and it's not a scene from the mansion that we've seen before, okay. If that makes sense. I shared on our Instagram page, because yesterday it was actually the Disney food blog, or Disney Parks and Disney Eats had a little reel about the creation of the gingerbread, which I think is so cool to see it up close, but the crypt says Von Ginger is the name of, like, the ghostly resident there. But I'm curious, who's Von Ginger?
Sure.
Tell me more about what this... Maybe there's no story, but I feel like there could be a story.
And the one-eyed cat statue is just the one, like, in the queue, right?
Yeah,
like,
the one
as
in
you're
the
before
queue.
You board? Okay.
So I thought that was fun because it now has a little gingerbread fish treat. Like, okay. Dead fish treat.
I don't know why my brain was not, like, I thought that's where the cat was, but then I was like, is it somewhere else? And I was just very confused. And then with the gingerbread house, like you said, we've had a theme recently of Nightmare or Haunted Mansion.
Or like a mismatch of the two.
So I was kind of like, this is totally different than that. That's where I kind of got lost. So you being the expert that you are in the Haunted Mansion and stuff, I thought you could enlighten me.
The thing that I was the most excited about, and the thing that was, I don't think a lot of people, I don't think it was on anybody's radar, but I really, really love, and I cannot wait to see this in person when we're there in October. I just love the nod to Rolly Crump that is now in the attic. I hope the little Candleman figure is going to be like a permanent resident. I hope it's not just there temporarily for the holidays. I think...
Oh, like they, permanently in the Haunted Mansion?
Yes. So this little guy was a concept that Rolly had done for the Museum of the Weird, which was the original idea for the Haunted Mansion. And there are tons and tons of ideas, but this is one of the things that he sketched and one of the ideas. I've seen sketches of this actually in the Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, the exterior area that they do a lot of displays and stuff for. I've seen sketches of the Candleman there, or the Candleman or the Wax Man. But I think it's such a weird, cool, fun thing, and just a perfect little nod to such a legendary Imagineer that did have a lot to do with the history and the creation of the mansion. I mean, it was Rolly Crump and Neil Gracie, like, had their own little, like, office that they were doing some, like, testing different concepts and creating different things, and they just kind of had this little, I don't know, workshop devoted to all the stuff that they were pumping out and creating. And I just finished Rolly Crump's book. It's kind of a cute story where he talks about this time in the mansion. And they just kind of were sitting there. It was just like this think tank, the two of them bouncing all these ideas off each other. And later, of course, other Imagineers got involved as well, and the mansion evolved into what it is today. But there was just a ton of stuff that they created that just never actually got to see the insides of the mansion. So I think it's really cool to bring some of that history back and put it, you know, have it as little hints and little Easter eggs in the mansion.
I think it's really neat that somebody cares enough,
yes,
to go back and find these things.
Yeah.
Now, anybody who's interested, if you haven't seen it, go look at the Disneyland 10th anniversary special. I can't remember. I think that one's on Disney Plus. And part of it is Walt talking about the Haunted Mansion, mm-hmm, and talking about the Museum of the Weird, because, yeah, that's what it was then. And you could see some of those things in, mm-hmm, that. But I didn't know about the Candleman, so I thought that was really interesting. And I love that we've gotten the Hatbox Ghost in the last few years, which was an original kind of effect. We've got the One-Eyed Cat now. We have this Candleman. Like, we're adding just these little hints of things that used to be there, which I think the diehard crazy fans, mm-hmm, really love. But also add something new and exciting to the mansion.
Right? Yeah, it's like new layers. Well, the characters around the resort also have some new fun outfits to celebrate the spooky season. Minnie, Mickey, Donald, Daisy, Pluto, Goofy, Clarabelle, and Chip and Dale all have new costumes for trick-or-treating, and they are super, super fun.
I mean, we've talked a little bit about this. We saw the sketches.
We did. We saw the sketches.
And
we saw the
concept.
And now
they're actually out.
I just have to say it right now. I cannot wait to meet Vampire Donald. Just love that he's got little vampire teeth in his mouth for his Halloween costume.
Fangs. Fangs,
yes,
is fangs, the word.
Yes. It reminds me of, remember when you were a little kid, those like plastic, yeah, terrible things that you put in your mouth and they like ripped your gums up because they were so like,
yeah,
yeah, terrible. But anyways, it just makes me think that Donald's got a set of something like that in his mouth. It's just funny to me.
Yeah, Mickey looks like, you know, like his dressed up kind tuxedo of, kind of thing, but dapper. For Halloween, Minnie kind of has like a witch kind of outfit. Not like a, not with the pointy hat or anything, but that kind of idea.
Her thing's bats, because you see her bow has a bat.
And so does her dress.
Yep, and then look at her shoes. She's got little bat bows on her shoes.
Daisy too is actually a witch, because she
Daisy's
has the hat. Donald's a vampire. Pluto is...
He's like spiders, so he's got like a spider web collar. And then his name plate or name tag is a spider.
Oh, and then Goofy is a jester, like a court jester. And then Clarabelle is...
She's got the spider thing
too. And then it looks like Chip and Dale are pumpkin ghost kind of
things. They're kind of a unique mashup, because for some reason... Oh, okay, that's why. I'm like, they remind me of candy corn for some reason. They do have little candy corns on their hats. I do like that they both have... Their hats are similar but different. But yeah, they've got like a pumpkin t-shirt, but over top is this kind of like ghostly bluish green fabric. So they're like, I don't know, ghost jack-o'-lanterns or something.
I want to say
they're cute.
That in my recent interactions with characters, I have always really liked Chip and Dale, but I have such an appreciation for their characters in the parks.
Mm-hmm.
They are so much fun. I think it'll be fun to see all these guys out and about doing stuff.
Yes.
Well, the newest land or re-theme of an area has officially opened at Disney California Adventure. San Francisco opened officially last Thursday to much fanfare and crowds. The new area features updated restaurants and menus, shops, and character meet and greets. The characters of Baymax and Hero from Big Hero 6 drew large crowds, causing them to back all the way into Cars Land. Mm-hmm. The same larger crowds were also present for the Baymax sourdough bread, which is also new to the land. That one went all the way out of the land in the other direction.
Yeah, and the Baymax sipper was the other big draw, too.
I did not expect lines like this for this. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I saw this pop up last week when it opened on Thursday, and I was like, wow, I did not realize that these characters were going to be such a draw.
I mean,
I love the characters, but I just didn't expect it.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. I like new details were added to the land that weren't there before. The one thing that stood out to me that I hadn't seen photos of previous to the official opening were all of the different... They have, like, Baymax lanterns that are hanging, and you just show there's, like, banners that have, like, little Baymax cut out of mm-hmm. them, too. Like... There's just all these fun little layers and levels of details. The other thing that I thought was really cool was in the Maker's Market. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at either photos or videos of the Maker's Market, but the details in there are super fun. Ooh. All of the different bots are kind of shown off in there. So in this photo that we're looking at here, of course, links in the show notes, Megabots kind of hanging up in the rafters, the top left corner. But then each display is like named after a bot. So you've got Wormbot or Snips. Well, if you look in the pile of like pieces and whatnot, you can see those fighter bots in there too. So I thought that was a really fun details that they brought into that shop.
I like that this shop has an open, airy feel to it. Like the ceilings and stuff are very high, and it just feels good for that spot. Yeah. A lot of the stuff is, you know, they did a really great job repainting the area, renaming a few things. I've heard pretty good stuff about the food. Yeah, I'm excited to try that, although I don't think we'll have too much time to do that. Of course, like, Baymax sourdough is just cute.
So cute.
But yeah, I think they did a really nice job on this. It turned out better than I expected, and they've done really well with the stuff they've done for it, and I was not expecting it to be as popular right out of the gate as it was. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Baymax character blinks, and I saw a video of Baymax coming out of the little area, and he moves just like you would expect. And I think I would enjoy just watching him come out and interact with people. Like, I don't even need a photo with him, but just watching him, like, hang out. Uh-oh, Teresa.
I have a new goal. I have a new Disney goal. I want to meet Baymax because I saw that you can fist bump him and he will do the ba-la-la-la-la.
Okay.
I really want to do that now. I want to meet Baymax just so I can fist bump him.
Fair. I also think the sipper is really cute with him cute. And the sucker.
Yes. I do have a correction to make, because on previous podcasts, we couldn't remember if Baymax had been to Disneyland yet or not. He had been to Disneyland. Okay. I want to say, now I'm going to get the year wrong. I believe it was like 2014. And he
previously.
Previously. And he was actually had a meet and greet for a short period in Tomorrowland.
That seems appropriate.
I don't quote me on the year, but it's...
I met Baymax at Disney World in Epcot, and I thought he was really cool in there.
Magic Key holders have more free gifts that can be picked up in the parks. This time, there are a series of 4 new Haunted Mansion trading cards. Each card has an iconic character from the mansion, as well as the cast member that helped bring the character to life. They are available from September 4th through September 28th at Disneyana, Monday through Thursdays only.
So, the Disney Food Blog, which we have linked in the show notes, had one that was the first one that... When held up, it's got a hologram on it. And when you hold it up, it features Madame Leota. But when you tilt it, you'll see Eleanor Audley, who voiced Leota in the original attraction. So I think that's really
There neat. Was Thurl Ravenscroft I saw with one of the singing busts. Those are the two that I've seen thus far. And like I said, there's 4 total. Sure. I'm very excited to see the rest of these. The other thing, too, that we did not mention, because some of this snuck under the radar, but starting on September 1st, at select locations, Magic Key holders might be able to get a free Magic Band with purchase.
Oh, yeah.
If you are a Magic Key holder, be sure to be on your Disneyland app and checking the Magic Key portal to see when these promotions are going on. So just, it's still on there for receive a complimentary Magic Key themed Magic Band Plus with any purchase. And it just says starting September 1st and while supplies last. They did give out all of them on September 1st, but I've seen reports throughout the weekend, including even today as we record this on the 5th, that each location is being restocked daily. So I don't know how long they're going to be. It's how long they last for the day, but then also how long they last over the course of time. There's no end date listed, but I mean, Tag's got Magic Bands. He's already sold on it. I would try a Magic Band if it were free. So there's
when we
no
were there,
way that they're still going to have them when we're there in October.
I found that it was very convenient for PhotoPass, and our pass includes PhotoPass. So I thought it was very convenient that instead of in the sun and everything trying to scan the barcode, that I could just blip my watch.
That's true.
So Tiana's Palace isn't quite ready to debut just yet. Soon, September 7th. But the Minjula Bar has already reopened. The biggest update to the location is the new queue that will better control the long lines that the location regularly sees. Guests now utilize a switchback to avoid spilling into New Orleans Square near the restrooms or clogging the narrow path in front of the Frontierland train station.
This will be really interesting to see once that area's more opened up and people realize that the Minjula Bar has reopened. I'm curious how much of the queue will be within the new switchback area versus how much will still overflow. Because let's face it, it's a very, very popular location. But I'm curious how well this will handle the demand of the queue.
I mean, anything is better than what it
was. Yes, definitely. It does look like it's extended out from what it had, because there was a little bit of queue before, but this definitely looks like it's extended even further.
So I want to give an update on this. So something that I noticed last time we went to the Mint Julep Bar was, I think something that was slowing the line down was the point of sale system they were using was awful. The last time I went, it seems like, and now this is funny, we've been enough that I feel like in the last 2 years, they've gone through like five different systems, which I don't even understand why. But I noticed that at a lot of locations I went to buying churros and stuff like that at these mobile carts, it has gotten much faster.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that this switchback plus the faster point of sale system will be able to kind of handle this amount of volume a little bit better than previously, where there was no switchback and the point of sale was very slow.
Let's hope. Some very exciting news as we record this. The first official Oogie Boogie Bash party night is beginning. We wanted to just kind of report, of course, there's going to be more news next week after the first few parties have come and gone. But for the villains that are going to be on the treat trails, there was a cast member preview a couple of nights ago, which is how we got this information. But for Treat Trails, we now have Madam Mim, Oogie Boogie, Mother Gothel, Ernesto de la Cruz, Cruella, Sid is back, Agatha, and new Judge Doom and Yokai. So we did lose Dr. Facilier, Maleficent, and the Evil Queen. Those three had, all three of them, I think, had been there since the original Oogie Boogie Bash, but they're no longer on Treat Trails, but you can still catch them in the Frightfully Fun Parade. The other fun things, too, is photo locations. Bruno is back. He's going to be at the Grizzly Peak Trail. Lotso new this year over at Toy Story Midway Mania. Minnie Mouse, Daisy Duck, and Clarabelle Cow will all be back as the Sanderson sisters. The Headless Horseman statue, of course. And another new thing this year that I'm very excited to see and check out and learn more about. It's just called the Sanderson Museum, which is down by the Golden Zephyr. So I'm really curious to see what the Sanderson Museum photo location is all about. We did have some sneak peeks. Our friend Scott, the Disneyland nurse, was there for the beginning of Halloween and also the grand opening of San Francisco. And he, took some pictures between... He saw this little setup and took some pictures, and you could see... What could you see? You could see the, a cauldron, the potions that they made would go in. There was also kind of in the back, you could see... This was so great. A broom, what we believe is a mop, and then also the infamous vacuum. And the spell book that was the backdrop for it had the spell that they used to turn Thackeray Binks into a black cat. So very obviously it had all the clues, and then ding 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 with that spell. So I'm just curious what this is going to entail.
I saw on Instagram stories of these new characters, and I saw the Judge Doom one, and I will tell you that the friend of Judge Doom sounds like Christopher Lloyd.
Really?
In the clips I saw, I was like, is this Christopher Lloyd? Because it was very good. And he has props. So he has the shoe that he can melt in the dip and has kind of a whole thing with it that I really enjoyed.
The treat trail itself. So Judge Doom's back where Maleficent had been. So kind of behind where Soarin' is. And the treat trail itself seems to have so much more decor and stuff, because really Maleficent, there was a lot of fog, and then there was a stage that she stood on that had a bunch of spinning wheels kind of built up, And it wasn't that big of a set. There wasn't really other things going on around. But this area looks like there's
a car.
There's a car. There's dip barrels kind of off, like not just on like the set that Judge Doom is, but kind of off like where you could like not dip your hand in dip, but you know what I mean? Like off to the side. So it's more of a themed area and not just a themed stage.
For I mean, look character. At it.
It's a very large looking display from what we could see. So I'm curious. I was kind of on the fence. I wasn't sure if I was excited about him being a new villain there or not. And like we were talking about last week, we were a little confused about him being there because he's from Toontown. He should be in the other park, you know, that sort of thing. But I'm excited. I'm very curious about this too.
Who is the other new person?
Yokai.
Okay, I didn't really see anything from Yokai.
I don't think he really talks.
Okay.
He's just very scary and very intense looking, yes.
Intense looking.
He's meeting and greeting over in San Francisco Square area.
Now, I know you're happy the Madam Mim is back.
I'm so happy. And I believe it's this is what I'm super excited about. I think it's the same Mim, friend of Mim from last year.
Yes.
And she was fantastic.
There's a very distinct look going on
there. She is fantastic.
And you said Sid is the same Sid too.
Sid is back, and I think it's the same friend of Sid that we've had.
You know what I wonder? Right
since year one.
What are these people doing between Oogie Boogie Bad? Because I feel like Disney should lock them down with like a contract because they are very good.
I feel like they might do that with Jack Skellington too, because I feel like Jack Skellington is just remarkable. And maybe it's the same maybe it's the same friends. Maybe it's not the same friends, but man, they are fantastic.
Yeah.
They're what bring these characters to
life. I'm excited to see these. And of course, I'm excited for Villains Grove again.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Welcome to Trivia Land, where we've got four listener-submitted questions and a bonus listener-submitted question that I am actually quite fond of. I like this bonus question. How are you feeling tonight? Do you have great knowledge in your heads and you're ready to answer everything?
You know, a little behind the curtain here, we just all ate dinner together, and I'm starting to go into like a food coma, so I guess we'll find out.
So all the blood that should be supplying you knowledge is instead supplying you digestion?
Something like that. So we'll have to see how it goes. So I do not guarantee anything.
You know, after we do the team dinners, we should start going on team walks just to...
There you go.
I do like walking after a good meal.
Circulation. It's good for you. It's what they say. But
yeah.
All right. Well, let's see how you do. Your first listener submitted question tonight from listener Tara F. One interior wall of Flo's V8 Cafe contains a mural dedicated to the gold and platinum record-winning musical group, the Motorama Girls. In addition to Flo, who are the other three singers featured in the mural?
Yep. That blood going to my digestive system is really screwing with me.
Oh, yeah, that's why you don't know the answer.
That's the reason.
In fairness, I think the only time I've ever been in Flo's was our last trip where I went with James and everything. And I think I was only in there for like 30 seconds. So I'm not even aware of this.
The mural's kind of like more in the dining area, too. It's not in the area that
we ate outside.
Who did I go there for breakfast with?
You might have had breakfast with James there.
Okay, because I thought that James was there, so I'm surprised you weren't there.
I, and James were all there in May.
Oh, was that when I stayed back at the hotel not feeling well?
You stayed back at the hotel one morning.
Like, I know I had breakfast.
The three of us were all, you, I, and James were all there, and that mural wasn't too far away.
Yeah.
I
was staring at it because I knew this question existed.
I think it's something, I don't think it's characters that we know from the films. Like, I don't think, you know what I mean? It's not like Sally, but I think it's something like, I think it's like Flo, right? But then I think there's also like Glow.
Glow?
Yeah, Flo, Glow, and
Mo.
Sure, we'll go with Mo.
Bro?
No, not like, yeah, I think their names, I think they all rhyme. I could be totally wrong, but That's my guess. And you're a big old question mark? Okay.
Food coma. That's my answer.
Okay, so you're saying glow and mow?
Yes.
All right. Final answer.
It's as good as we're getting.
All right, and tag your hitch and wagon to that?
No, I'm food coma.
Food coma is your answer.
He's staying far away from this.
Well, that's fitting. We are talking about a restaurant, so. All right. Your second listener submitted question from listener Kavei S. What is the elevation of New Orleans Square?
Ooh.
Is this like on a sign somewhere?
Ooh.
It can be seen while, to the best of my memory, it can be seen while you are on the Disneyland train.
I don't know. 138 feet. I think that's probably the elevation of like the Main Street station. So I could be wrong, but
I will give it to you if you're within five.
That just for something just that number came to me in a food induced sweat. I don't know.
I'm just gonna ignore that you said that. I feel like it's 18 something.
Like 1,800 and something, or just 18?
Like 18 something.
Okay.
Like I don't know if it's a real elevation or if it's a like Easter egg. I'm feeling like it might be an Easter egg. I'm gonna say 1893. That's just my random, very very random guess.
1893
okay.
is your answer. All right, final answers.
Yeah.
Final.
We'll lock them in. All right.
Lock them in. I think you're too high.
Your
could be
third regular round question from listener Sarah P. Club 33 Platinum members have access to another lounge at the resort. What is it called?
1901.
Yeah, 1901. Club 1901.
Bonus point. Where is it located?
Above the Carthay Circle restaurant in California
in
Adventure.
DCA. I didn't know only certain levels.
All right, so you're saying 1901 lounge at the Carthay Circle. Is that your final answer?
Yep.
Final.
Lock that in. And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Elise K. How long is the Pirates of the Caribbean Canal? In feet, please.
Ooh.
That's a great question. I'd like to know where this information came from.
Wow.
In feet, huh?
In feet.
Disney Parks Blog sometimes releases some of these very...
We get a lot of our questions submitted to us from Disney Parks blog. We get a lot of stuff from D23. And everything is vetted by me before I ask.
3,000 feet.
3,000? Final answer,
Tay? Yeah.
All right.
I have no idea.
Well, think about all the places it goes. It goes through the bayou.
No,
it goes down the drop.
But I also
goes
like,
through the caves.
How many feet are in a mile? Like, you know.
Well, a mile is 5,000, blah, 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 blah.
Okay. That helps then. Thank you. Okay.
I only know that because there was a McDonald's billboard that I used to pass all the time that said that the next McDonald's is only 5,000 whatever feet ahead.
Away.
And it was like Ronald McDonald's giant clown shoes. But it meant a mile.
Mm. Hmm. Okay, what did you say? 3,000?
3,000. You know, like, I love you 3,000. Isn't that a thing for Marvel?
Cripes.
But the way I calculated it was I thought, okay, I know how long a foot is. The loading station is probably maybe 75 to 100 feet long. And then if I just take that visually in my mind and like put it back to back and go through the whole thing, it's probably around 3,000.
Well, I'm saying 4,000.
4,000?
Yeah,
okay.
I think it's longer.
Wow.
Maybe it just seems longer because you're floating slowly along for
parts.
It's
possible.
But yeah. I'm curious for this one now.
So, Teresa, I'm sorry, your answer was?
4,000.
4,000. All right. Final answers.
Yeah.
Yep.
3,000 feet and 4,000.
It's very number-heavy trivia we've
it
got
is.
Going here.
Except for glow, flow, mo.
So it was a name question, a number question, a name question, and a number question.
Well, but the name of the second one is a number.
Is a number.
At least our guess was.
Your answer you gave was a number. You don't know that
your mom's a number.
We know nothing.
And your bonus question, submitted by listener Finn C.
That's a new one.
Disneyland has many dedication windows on Main Street. Name them all. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, boy.
There are also some in other places throughout the park. In Frontierland, there is such a window. Can you name the fictional business and the person it's dedicated to?
Oh, it's... I don't remember what it's called, but it's Tony Baxter.
Is that where Tony Baxter's thing is?
He has a window on Main Street. But there's... It's Tony Baxter. I don't remember what the heck the business is. I can only ever remember the assay office, because I think it's hilarious. Now, every time you're on Big Thunder, you're going to have that voice as you go past.
Well, because are you thinking like Foghorn Leghorn, like, I say now.
Yeah.
Settle down, boy. Yeah. I also think that, like, when I see that,
like,
by the way.
Like, when I see that, yeah, when I see that, I think that. That's the, like, that.
Assay.
That.
What is an assay office?
Mm.
Well, yeah, I guess if you don't Google it, the terms of Disneyland, you're not going to be.
Testy metal or ore.
Oh, okay.
So it's probably not actually pronounced like we are pronouncing it in our minds.
Well, it's pronounced, or there's assay. So yeah. Assay. It's the assay office.
Yep, assay.
I'm going to say Tony Baxter. I'll go with you on that one, but I have no idea what the business is.
I can't remember.
I assume it's something related to Big Thunder in some way.
Is there like an excavation office? I'm going to say that it's an excavation office.
Okay. Tony Baxter, excavation, and I'm just saying Tony Baxter. So the most I can get is a half a point.
Okay, so Tony Baxter's excavation office, is that your final answer?
I mean, it's more cutesy than just Tony Baxter's excavation office. Yeah. But yes.
All right. Well, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you think Tag and Teresa did? Stick around until after the discussion topic, and we are all going to find out together.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are talking with Eric Robison, who is a Disney artist and Imagineer. And you might, if you've stayed at the Howard Johnson Anaheim, you might, and I only say this because I've noticed it, you might have noticed his name or seen his name on the photos they have there, because they're part of the 100 Mickey's collection that he's known for. Please welcome to the show, Eric Robison. Welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, you guys. Thanks for having me. Always fun to do these. So.
Well, we are super excited to chat with you. And before we get into it, we just want to get to know you a little better. Can you tell us your Disney story? So what kind of introduced you to Disney, the company, whether it was the movies, the theme parks? What's your history?
My background as a child is very similar to a lot of, at least Imagineers. Southern California kid, grew up 45 minutes away from Disneyland. Big family, went there all the time, and obviously, amazing childhood memories. That's my favorite park, of course. I was there the opening day of the Haunted Mansion.
Wow.
I ditched my 10th grade class in the 75 to go see Space Mountain first day opening. I mean, I was not a Disney nerd, but definitely loved it very much. And every Sunday night, my family watched Walt Disney on TV, you know, do his TV show, which was like the whole family sit down and watch that. 7 o'clock Sunday evening. So, you know, I kind of grew up with Disney in our blood, our family. And as far as working there, I actually said no to Imagineering the first time they asked me to work there, which was really stupid, according to my mom. So I went back and said yes. it was a long story, but that's the short version of it. I was in college, and Disney recruiter was walking down the hallway, saw my paintings in a classroom, and walked in and said, who's that artist right there? And they said, oh, it's Eric over there in the corner. Guy gave me a business card, said you should come interview with us. And I said, oh, that's okay. I'm going to be a car designer. Because that was my major, car design, industrial design.
Oh.
And so he said, you really should just talk to us. What the heck? Get up the loose. And I said, that's okay. I took his card. And I came home, I told my mom. She goes, you know what, you really should at least go talk to them, because they're probably going to pay better than Detroit Car Company. You're going to be in warm weather all year, and you get to stay next to your family. And she was right on all those accounts. They offered me 3 times the salary of a car design job. But that's not why I took the job. I walked into the lobby, and while I was waiting with my portfolio, there was a Herb Ryman painting above the couch where I was waiting. I still have a copy of the painting. It's this Tokyo painting.
Oh. Yeah.
You see there, Elevate Your Life, I wrote to myself. Anyway, mm-hmm. that painting changed my life right away. And I went, whoever did that, whatever that is right there, that's what I want to do for a living. And that's how I got to Imagineering, basically.
Dang.
Wow.
That's a really...
Herbie Ryman captured me right away.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. That's very cool.
All right. Well, since Disneyland's like your favorite place, when you go there on the first day of a visit, so if you go visit for multiple days or something like that, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland, through to Fantasyland, right to Tomorrowland? What's kind of your attack plan? And
I always do the same thing. I never noticed it. I always, from the ticket station, I always go through the right side.
Mm-hmm.
By Abe Lincoln's side, Main Street side.
But
when I go to the hub, I turn left through Adventureland.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite side of the park in every way. Adventureland, New Orleans Square is my favorite area.
Wow. Yeah, we do the same thing. In fact, that was going to be the second part of my question was, which tunnel? Because as we've asked this question over the years, people have started talking about the tunnel, which side of the tunnel they go through. So that's interesting because I always, in fact, this last trip, we went in and we had brought some people who had never been before, and they started going towards the left side and said, no, we got to go this way. It's tradition. So we went that way, and we always go towards Adventureland for the most. Now, this time, we had a three-year-old, so we went to Fantasyland, but usually Adventureland.
One time, my protocol changes. By the way, when I was a kid, we always went to the Lincoln attraction first on Main Street. So my dad would always take the right tunnel, mm-hmm. go straight to the Lincoln thing, and watch that show, which I absolutely hypnotically adored that show. It was incredible to see Abe Lincoln in real life,
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Especially when you're a little kid, right?
Yeah.
So I was transfixed by that. Now, my protocol changes if I'm with somebody that wants to go on all the speed rides, like Space Mountain, Star Tours, and all that, they all cut right. But for me, if I'm with my posse, it's left turn. Yeah.
So what is it, do you think, that really draws you into Adventureland and New Orleans Square? What about that part of the park makes it your favorite?
The subject matter right away. I love jungly stuff, and I love scary stuff. So, I love Pirates of the Caribbean is my favorite ride. The first half of it, my favorite attraction of anywhere.
Wow.
So I just love pirates. I love jungles. I mean, it's all there, right?
You got
snakes in the trees and all that stuff. It's just my favorite subject matter, which is ironic because I do a lot of science fiction work, a lot of paintings. And concept work for machinery, robots. My first job in Imagineering was to do a droids for Tokyo Star Tours. So I like to work on sci-fi stuff, future stuff, but I like to go to environments that are jungly and scary and piratey. It's a split brain here.
I have to ask a follow-up question, though. You said the first half of Pirates. Where is that point for you?
Yeah, right after the big battle scene, and you're turning right after that. The cannons are blowing across the water, and there's a little chimney to the left, little fake fiery, and I worked on that, and I remember because it malfunctioned or something, so I had to go down and fix it. I was really stoked to get the pirates fixed. But that's my favorite section and favorite part of any attraction in all Disney parks. I just you think about it, guys, the Blue Bayou in the beginning, you smell that water, you hear that faint banjo, you can hear the waterfall by head, but you're not sure what it is. And then you go down into the dungeons and caverns. It's just fantastic theater, it's like the ultimate immersive escapism, right?
Yeah,
I like the fire room and all that stuff after and the auction stuff. That's cool, but I just like that immersive kind of, it's like spooky and dark and I don't know. That's just my favorite thing. I don't know.
Well, then the cool thing too is like you're being pulled into a story, but there's not really there's not a story really unfolding in front of you yet. It's just the area that is the story. It's not like you said, there's not little scenes that you're looking at necessarily. There's sure little things here or there, but it just pulls you in there.
Yeah, it's very sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off real slow and calm, and you hear crickets and you see fireflies. And yeah. I mean, that's just beautiful, slow opening to yeah. this. They're on, there's this, you know, this freak bombs and fires and all this other. It's just the perfect progression for your blood pressure. Yes, it's fantastic.
It's great. Perfect progression for your blood pressure.
I have to ask, have you been to Disneyland Paris before?
I worked on it. And yes, I've been. I haven't been since it opened.
Did you ever ride Pirates of the Caribbean in Paris?
I did not. No, it wasn't finished then. I worked on Discoveryland predominantly for EDL. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Because I just went.
They were in my office working. I just saw everything that they were designing and building. I saw the model and everything. You know.
Yeah. I thought one thing about the pirates in Paris that was interesting was you start kind of up. And then you go down the waterfall into the battle scene, and I thought that that was really striking, that it was so different than the Disneyland version. So it kind of builds up the suspense and gets you going a little more hastily than Disneyland. But
it drops you into the...
Yeah, I just remember thinking it was so cool, but I still like Disneyland's the best.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do too? Yeah, I just like it. It's and by the way, I can't 100% make that statement because I haven't compared it to... I actually heard the Shanghai Pirate was a show fantastic. So
that one sounds like it's just almost like it's hard to compare because it's so different than the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the good news is they're all different. They are different. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Imagineering decided that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well,
most people go back to what they liked as a kid and they still like it. And that's me. I'm different than a lot of people. Disneyland's my home base, you know, so.
Well, speaking of Imagineering, let's kind of jump into some of your early career in Imagineering. So you got pulled in because of the person that came to college, but also then the Herbie Ryman painting that you saw. So what you said that your first thing to work on was the droids for Tokyo. Can you tell us about the droids and what made that interesting?
The first major thing I worked on. Mm-hmm. Park. My very, very first thing, I worked for SQS, which is called Show Quality Standards, behind Pirates at Disneyland in a trailer. And I was there for 2 months designing popcorn parts for Main Street in Maryland. And so right away, as a junior designer, they were kind of testing me out. So I was doing little sketch studies for popcorn carts, and they needed one for Tomorrowland. So coming right out of Art Center school and doing science fiction, I designed this popcorn walker that would walk around. It was a big robot walker that was a popcorn machine would walk around Tomorrowland, right? And so this is how I got introduced to Marty Sklar and the bosses at Imagineering. So anyway, I designed this. I did a pretty nice rendering of it. And the idea was a spaceman would walk around next to him and serve the popcorn to the kids. And it would walk next to him, right? So massive idea. So they took it up to Imagineering, put it on the wall, and all the big guns were there, and I was standing in the back, and there's all these little popcorn cute carts on the wall, right? And then there's this my big robot guy. And so the president of Imagineering, Marty Sklar, goes, "What the hell? Who the hell did that?" And my boss turns and points at me. Well, that's Eric. He's the new guy. He's only been here for a month. And I was all stoked, like, he loves it, right? But he says, "Do you have any idea how much that costs?" Popcorn. You know, it's for popcorn. That looks like a $6 million robot, right? And he said, plus the liability of that walking around and stepping on kids' feet, you know, we're going to get sued and blah, blah, blah. But I learned really quick about budgets and safety my first month there.
But, man, that would have been cool.
I would have bought, you know, their popcorn sales would have gone up because I would have bought popcorn from that.
So I still have the sketch, by the way. It's pretty cool. It was called the Mega Popper 5000.
The Mega Popper.
You know, when you add like a 5000 after it, you know.
Yeah. So what happened from that meeting, though, even though it was kind of an embarrassing error I made, Marty sent a note to my boss and said, "Put the kid on Tokyo Star Tours right now."
Nice.
So that's how I got on Star Tours. And so my first job was to design droids. And so I designed a bird droid. Gosh, I'm always doing stuff that's weird and different. And somebody said, why, what's that? I said, it's a bird droid. It's a droid, but it's a bird. You know, cool, right? Well, this time they did like it very much, and they built it. And so I was super proud because, you know, I was only a kid in my 20s, and I already had a droid they were going to build and put into a Disney park. So.
Yeah.
And then later on, they made a toy of it in Tokyo. So it was pretty cool. Wow. So that was my first job ever at Imagineering.
That's a pretty good start, I think, because I feel like there's some people who have started Imagineering and it takes them a long time to get noticed or to work on anything cool. And you learned a lot about liability and budgets, but then you got to do something like actually really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I was saying at the convention last month that all of my failures turned into great successes in the end, but they were all super embarrassing at the moment. So, and that was the very first embarrassing thing I went through, but gosh, look what, you know, got me a good gig after. So pretty cool in the end.
Exactly. So I'm just looking through, because you sent over a really amazing list of all the things that you worked on when you were in, you know, working with Disney and in Imagineering. And there's some pretty big things that are on here. We've got the Tower of Terror, Westcott, all sorts of cool things. But one story that I really enjoyed that you shared at the Mouse Meet was you were talking about painting in a hallway. Can you kind of tell us a little about the Imagineering hallway?
Yeah, so Marty Sklar's idea, there was a big beige blank hallway that ran through the central nerves of Imagineering. Everybody had to take that route, no matter where you went, from your office to lunch, from your office to a meeting, from your office to the Gold Coast, which was all the presidents and VPs. So it was this vein that went through the company, and he thought it was so boring. And he says, Imagineering is supposed to be fun and funky and crazy and wild, so I want everybody to come in. We're going to organize a paint out, kind of a, we're going to paint the whole hallway. So he had some people paint on the actual wall these fake frames. Okay, you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. They look kind of 3D, but they're painted by scenic people.
Oh, wow.
And so the whole hall had these empty scenic frames faux painted onto the wall. And so the announcement was, hey, this Thursday morning, everybody be at work on time because we're going to do this paint, this graffiti hallway or whatever you want to call it. And I told my boss, I said, shoot, I have a dental appointment. I'm not going to be able to make it. Shoot. Oh, well. Because I really had to go to the dentist. I was, you know, so go to the dentist, and I get to work late. And everybody was almost done with the hallway. And I was going, oh, good, I don't have to do it. Like, you know, I got off the, like I got off this gig. I didn't, you know. And I'm walking through the hallway looking at everybody's work. And the HR person there said, hey, Eric, you're here. I said, oh, yeah, I'm sorry I'm late. I'm sorry, I don't have, there's no more spaces. So she goes, oh, yeah, there is. There's one right here in the middle of the hallway, dead central. It was this huge frame that was painted. It was probably 8-9 feet blank. Nobody wanted to do it because it was too big. I went, oh, shit, really? But I don't, there's no more paint left, right? She goes, oh, we're going to get you some paint. And so they just pushed these carts over to the thing and said, go, you go, go, you're late, so get going, do this. And like, shit, okay. So Herbie had just passed away. And so I said to myself, well, what am I going to paint, right? Everyone's doing different things. Some things were not even Disney related. They were just paintings to decorate. Mm. And so I said, you know what, that Herbie has been my inspiration since the first day here, so I'm going to paint a castle in kind of his vein, or not style per se, but with him in my mind, at least, in my heart. So I just started finger painting all the blue and purple I could squeeze onto the wall and start dripping onto the floor. It was a big mess. And I was just finger painting the sky and the ground all purple. And then I just took a white brush just to outline the castle, so I could fill it in later. But as I outlined it in white against the blue-purple, it looked like this ghosted version of Disneyland Castle. It looked kind of nice, like different, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just kept it. And then I put some hot orange light in the gated doorway of the castle, splashed some stars in the sky with a toothbrush brush, and put some black trees on the side and a bunch of silhouetted people. And I turned around and everybody was watching me. It was amazing.
You're like, oh, hi.
and everyone was just like, you know, so that's complimentary. Awesome. And that day changed my life because I didn't know I could paint. I was an industrial painter. And I could render with markers, but I didn't know I could paint. And I was just goofing around. And that's the day that everybody asked me to do their paintings. So that's how I got to paint. Tower of Terror job and Westcott and Beauty and the Beast. All this stuff came from that day and that kind of a strange moment after my dental appointment. So yeah, that's what happened. So that was a happy accident.
Wow, that's cool. That's really cool. That just happened to be, like you said, the domino, or you know, whatever you want to call it, that just kind of paved the way for the rest of your projects while you were there.
It's still there too.
Oh, is it? That's cool.
That's still there. Really
that's
cool.
Very cool.
I find it interesting that you kind of were like, oh, I don't want to have to do this, and kind of were like, oh, cool. And like, I don't know. I feel like in a way. And I'm not saying like you're a bad person or anything for this, but like, I think it'd be really cool to like leave your mark on Imagineering for like ever. Although I guess it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. I'd be with the pressure. Yeah.
But
hard.
Everybody left you the biggest one because they're like, well,
yeah, nobody wanted to do that one.
Yeah,
I'll say this in response to that is I'm a very nervous person, and so I was scared to screw up the wall.
Yeah.
Well, so I didn't want to do it because I felt like, what if I, you know, if you screw up, because there's no eraser.
And, that's true.
And everybody's watching. And I wasn't used to painting even, you know, in front of people.
Like, yeah.
100 Imagineers in the hallway. And Marty Sklar was walking up and down. So that's why I didn't want to do it. It's not because of the mark. It's because I just prayed. Yeah.
See, but my thing would be,
fear,
everyone
the
sees
fear
it.
The fear made me better, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's so awesome.
So for all you people listening, don't let fear stop you.
It can motivate you, yeah.
So let's talk about some of those bigger projects. So you mentioned like Tower of Terror, Westcott. What was it that you helped with or did for those projects?
Yeah, so Westcott was further down the line. Tower of Terror was not there on opening day of the studios. And so I was called by Bob Weiss's team. Bob Weiss at that time was the head of, well, he was building the studios. And they wanted me and my office mate to work on second phase already of MGM Studios, Disney MGM Studios. So it wasn't even finished and we were working on second phase.
Wow, yeah.
So we flew down there and worked on two things. One was the concept for a second date. How do I say this? Not science fiction, but it was another movie section. I made it a science fiction land, kind of. So I had this hybrid architecture of kind of Blade Runner-esque and nature combined. All this funky, real sci-fi. I mean, I was really loving it. And then they said, Eric, we got this idea for Mel Brooks, to work with Mel Brooks. I went, wow, awesome. I love Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks to do this haunted hotel in Hollywood. And I said, oh, that sounds awesome. I want to be on that. So I went to not the very first meeting, because the very first meeting was mostly writers and Mel Brooks and Michael Eisner and all those guys. Mm-hmm. But the very first visual meeting, and I had a really bad sketchbook. It was like tracing paper. And I had a ballpoint, really crappy equipment that day. I don't know why. I grabbed all the shitty stuff from my office at the meeting. So I'm there. And so my job at the meeting is to visualize what the writers are talking about. Mm-hmm. So they're talking and I'm sketching, just, you know. And at the end of the meeting, they say, Eric, what do you got? And I just put the page up. I said, well, this is kind of what I was. And they said, wow, that looks great. Can you go to your office and paint that by tomorrow? I said, paint it, like, in one day? Like, they were big hurry. So I went, oh, my God, it's going to be super loose. But, yeah, I'll do it. I mean, it's going to be sloppy. And they said, okay, just do your thing, Eric. So this basically just pulled an all-nighter. Next day, at lunch, they came to my office, and there it was. I And they took it. And guess what, you guys? It ended up in the Orlando newspaper. Yeah, that's the picture I sent you.
Yeah, yeah.
The black and white painting that says, coming soon, this Hollywood Tower. Mm-hmm. That looks nothing like it does today. That was the concept, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They used that one day painting, it's probably 6-8 hours, for publicity.
You're like, well.
Cool. Yeah. You know, but then, of course, they changed the design completely, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that was fun. So I have the original sketch of that. And
that's crazy.
The crappy sketch I did in the conference room, I have that. Because there was a throwaway sketch. I mean, it's not something. They liked it. So,
yeah. Dang.
It must be crazy to be part of a meeting like that where they're just talking about stuff and you're just kind of, I don't know, I kind of envision like you're sitting there kind of like doodling almost, just kind of making like a quick like draft. And then at the end, you're like, what do you got? I mean, that seems like a lot of pressure to be listening to somebody and come up with that. Now, you sent us some photos, and we'll work to put these in the show notes for the episode, but you sent us quite a few photos here. You sent like from the newspaper clipping, but also there's kind of a cool, I want to say it's almost like a watercolor looking painting of the Hollywood Tower, which I think is just gorgeous.
Yeah, there's lots of like yellows and oranges in
it. Yeah, I did that 2 years ago for Imagineering. Mm. That was a study to do for the Walt Disney World's 50th anniversary painting I did.
Oh,
so that was a study. And then the other painting you see there, full color, that's actually a finished product. But that's I wanted to show you that because that's an example of how, you know, you do a rough, you know, it's like tea and dyes and watercolors, and it's real sloppy. In fact, I think my lunch menu is written on the side of that. It says tuna sandwich. It says a half a tuna sandwich.
Yeah, it does.
Yep.
Does it? Yeah.
Yeah, it does. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, I just heard from a huge Disney fan. He's a marathon runner, and he said, wow, you don't ever eat sandwiches? He says, nope, never. I said, well, what if I love that. He says, you can eat a half a tuna sandwich, be fine. And so I wrote it down that day.
That's fun.
But you know what, though? Like, it's cool. There's something about the sloppy nature. Like, I would buy this, like, as a print to, like, hang on the wall. There's something about the kind of, like, impromptu-iness of it that just is very captivating and just is, I mean, the final one that you did is really nice too, but for me, like, I kind of like the roughness of the other one. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I usually like rough sketches of artists' work.
Yeah.
I never like their final stuff. That's always been me too. I just like that.
Now,
that's my energy.
Now, I see also here that you worked a little bit, and you said it earlier too, that you worked on Discoveryland.
I noticed Port Long Beach on there too.
That you worked on stuff. You worked on Discoveryland. Now, I feel like Paris has one of the few Tomorrowlands that works thematically. So what did you do for Discoveryland? Because like that's quite a Herculean effort to have a successful Tomorrowland kind of land.
Yeah, I came in. Tim Delaney was the producer for Discoveryland. And after I did the Star Tours Tokyo droids, they moved me over to Discoveryland because, once again, I was kind of hired as the a robot or science fiction, you know, kind of the industrial designer kind of job. So it was logical to put me into kind of the steampunk, Jules Verne tech-looking place, right? So Tim was working on the Space Mountain forever. He did a lot of beautiful versions, absolutely gorgeous stuff that actually his practice design concepts were maybe even more beautiful than the final. Anyway, he was really fun to watch paint in the office. And so he let me take a crack at it. And I didn't want to be like him. So I did a very natural looking mountain, but it didn't fit the Jules Verne theme. It was more biomechanical, a little darker theme, waterfalls and stuff. It was pretty, how do I describe it? It was not mechanical. It was very different for a Space Mountain. Anyway, that kind of wasn't on target. So he continued to be the lead on all of that stuff. And I started to do secondary and tertiary design work. Because don't forget, I was still only 28 years old or something.
Wow.
So I would do sketches of like They were going to put Star Tours in there, so I did work on that. I worked on Videopolis, the restaurant and stage show area, and did paintings and renderings of that. So I was, I was just a show designer working for that. So whatever you wanted, that's where I would draw. You just basically give me assignments.
Wow.
Right.
That sounds like a fun job, especially if you're a creative person that likes, coming up with these things or whatever. Like, I mean, for somebody who loves drawing or painting or whatever, like, that sounds like a dream job. Just like people just keep telling you, we kind of want this, we kind of want that. All right.
Yeah, it's a dream job.
Yeah.
My favorite thing I did for Discoveryland, and actually there's a print of it in the Discoveryland or Main Street restaurant or something. It's a dual telescopic robot that is a centerpiece of a store. And so, you have Disney stores and there's kind of a little hub in the middle sometimes, and that's the cashier, et cetera. But they wanted a decorative piece to come above that was themed to the land, right? So I did this giant robotic kind of, there's a two telescopic, it's hard to describe, I wish I could show you the sketch. But the theme was all bells and whistles and lights up, and it was supposed to be this cool thing to look at the stars for, but it was all fake. It was just a fake centerpiece. And then they asked me to do the Star Tours sign out in front, and then this is a typical amateur error. I took the Death Star and I stuck it on a big stick like a lollipop. So it looks like the Death Star. You can see it's in one of the Disney books. And here's the Death Star, right?
Yeah.
And I put it on a big stick. Yeah, I should have designed the stick better. Just like the thing, and then it said Star Tours. And it looked really, now that I look back on it, everybody loves to look at that. But it's pretty silly looking. But
Death Star on a stick.
Yeah, you got to check it out. It's in the Euro Disneyland book, the very first big picture book.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You'll see it. It's funny.
That's funny. We'll go through a couple more things of, like, from your Imagineering career, and then we'll transition into your current artist's career and kind of how you got to where you are today. So a couple of things I think would be fun to talk about are a couple of projects that you worked on that never came to be. I see there's Port Long Beach as well as Westcott, which I don't know what it is. Westcott is the park that fans would have loved to have seen. There's something, I don't know if it was the captivating concept,
I mean, it was amazing.
Or the whole, yeah, it just sounded incredible. But from your lens working on these two projects, what was your involvement and what was it? What was your thoughts with these projects?
They're about the same time frame.
I worked on them simultaneously almost. Port Long Beach I worked on first and I jumped over. But Doris Hardoon was the producer of both of those lands anyway. So it was kind of, I was working for her in both, doing concept work for both of her produced properties. However, Westcott was really her baby more than anything. Mm-hmm. Port Long Beach was a little bit of a quieter, talked about thing. But you guys, my best work was, of those two parks, my best work was Port Long Beach. It was, I was super proud of it. It was really going to be cool, Port Long Beach. Yeah, it didn't work out, but gosh, that was really fun to work on. Westcott wasn't as fun for me. And I think it's because the subject was different. It was a very complex project. There was a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Gotcha. Yep.
You know what I'm saying? You're constantly getting opinions and ideas. And it was just like almost, I kind of felt bad for Doris because she's very calm and managed people very well. Very, very good at that job. I don't think I could do that because there was just a lot of moving parts. It was okay. I didn't love it as much as other projects I worked on. And I don't even know why I'm saying that. I think it was just the vibe, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, let's focus on Port Long Beach because I don't know hardly anything about what that was going to be. I've seen concept art, but I don't really like it. Looks beautiful. But tell us about Port Long Beach.
So Dan Gizet was an illustrator that freelanced for Imagineering, and he was amazing. He was a huge inspiration on that project because he would come in like every Friday with a new painting and go, wow, look at that, wow. So I had to up my game to compete with this guy, even though he's 24, But I said, man, I better get my shit together. I want to be good like that. So I used all of my industrial design knowledge and architectural knowledge really grew it into that project. And I really, at this point, by the way, I was getting better at designing to budget and safer looking stuff, right? So, you know, it's funny because years later, I'm just a deviate for a second.
Yeah,
Tim Burton lost his job at Disney Studios because his stuff was too scary. Yeah. And it wasn't Disney enough, right? Well, I felt like that's what I was for, at some point, because I was designing stuff that was like way out there. But anyway,
yeah.
my idea is, I'm trying to remember who was leading. I don't remember Doris really leading the design discussions, but what we were doing was a combination of obviously aquarium stuff. Mm-hmm. We went to the Monterey Bay Aquarium, but what I like to do is I added on observatory and space knowledge to the aquarium arena. So in other words, I designed this gigantic aquarium inspired by the Monterey kelp farms. Mm. You go to the Monterey Bay Aquarium, these gigantic kelp farms, and you see this kelp floating, and it's very spooky and beautiful. So I put integrated these tubes underneath this giant geodesic dome of these kelp beds, and it made it a laboratory, a giant laboratory. And you could walk through the laboratory and stairs and tunnels and all that stuff and walk through these tubes, right? And then there would be a submarine ride. It would come under it and come out of it into the park area proper. And then attached to that was a vertical element architecturally of an observatory. So I thought that was a cool combination to do underwater and outer space because, let's face it, they're kind of related in their mysterious ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was my ideas, and I have a lot of those renderings and sketches in my sketchbook still. They're fun to look at. Yeah, that was a fun park, but, you know, like all of us have said before at Imagineering, the final decisions are business decisions.
Yeah.
Got to make money. That's really, it's fun to do entertaining things, but they have to be feasible. So
That brings me to a question that I've never asked any of the folks that we've talked to from Imagineering, and I'm just gonna ask you your opinion and your kind of ballpark. Like, obviously, you know, you're probably not gonna be able to talk to specifics, but like in your observations of working at Imagineering, it seems like Imagineering they design and make a lot of things, right? Like they propose a lot of things. If you had to guess, just spitball, ballpark off the top of your head, what percentage of the stuff that you guys come up with makes it to the park in some way?
Well, a lot of it, first of all, is the answer.
Oh, good.
Because, I mean, you hear some things that didn't make. I worked on Beauty and the Beast for Euro Disneyland, and it didn't make. It turned into a Broadway show. But don't forget that it's a big piece of real estate. There's a big chunk of money, and there's usually an initial idea that somebody says, look, we want this to be a pirate area. We want this to be a Star Wars area. And so some stuff doesn't make it into it, but I think the majority does if it's given as an assignment like that. So like when Walt said, hey, look, I want a Jungle Cruise over here, you know, there was probably a bunch of gags that didn't make it into it, but the Jungle Cruise still got made, right?
Sure.
So there's elements of these things that don't make it in, but there's only a few giant projects like Westcott, Port Long Beach, et cetera. And some of the I worked on some Epcot stuff some countries that were going to go in that didn't ever go in. So I did a Russian Epcot area, and that was fun to work on too, but didn't make it, right? Yeah. So, but Epcot's still there. So some elements, don't make it. So I can't get your percentage. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting because I feel like a lot of people, like you said, people see these big projects and they think, well, that whole thing was wiped away. But you also hear stories about, you know, like there's in the concept art for Port Long Beach, there's a volcano. And I think I had heard that like that eventually kind of turned into what Tokyo Disney Sea is. Mm-hmm. So it maybe doesn't show up where they originally think about it, but they don't ever throw anything away. And years later, they might come up with something. Based on exactly.
If you look at Splash Mountain, that's a bunch of remnants from the Carousel of Progress. They just took all those figures and they brought them over the other side of the park and stuck them inside of, you know, a tree. Yeah. So stuff doesn't go to waste, really, that I can see. And even props and stuff end up in Trader Sam's or, I mean, know, stuff just gets pushed around a little bit.
The collector's warehouse is another fun place where some of those old...
Somehow they get their money's worth out of stuff, right?
For this week's episode, we're going to end it here. Okay. And then join us next week where we're going to talk to Eric about his artistic endeavors that were not imagineering. So stay tuned for that next week. Well, if you enjoyed listening to this episode of the show, please consider rating and reviewing our show on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and part of the community.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, D.O. Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, where we are going to find out the correct answers to tonight's trivia and see just how Tag and Teresa did.
You know, the way he worded that does not give me hope.
No. No, I'm confident on one.
Yeah, me too.
So Tag and Teresa, how do you think you
did?
Well,
1 out of 5, mm-hmm. confidently.
Okay, well, let's find out, shall we? Your first listener submitted question tonight from listener Tara F. One interior wall of Flo's V8 Cafe contains a mural dedicated to the gold and platinum record-winning musical group, the Motorama Girls. In addition to Flo, who are the other three singers featured in the mural?
The other three?
The other three
Whoops.
Singers featured in the mural.
There are only three total.
Well, we're not off, so, we're not good off to the math here.
They came up with two names, Food and Coma.
Yep.
And Teresa came up with two names, Glow and Mo, staying on the rhyming scheme with Flo. The correct answer that we were looking for, the Motorama Girls were named Flo, Sheila, Rhonda, and Laverne.
Yeah, way off.
none of those rhymed,
no,
Teresa.
Nope, none of those rhymed. Laverne and Sheila. And who was the other one? Laverne, Sheila, and...
Rhonda. Yes. Your second listener submitted question tonight from Kaveh ES. What is the elevation of New Orleans Square? Tag said 138 feet above sea level. And Teresa said 1,893 feet above sea level. The correct answer we were looking for was 144
Ooh,
feet.
Good job.
Very close, Tag.
Did I?
Was it,
didn't make
five.
It within the five. I'm going to give you a half point. You were within 10.
I mean, that's pretty good.
That's very close.
That is very close. See, I thought it was just like a fun number, not an actual.
Your third listener submitted question from listener Sarah P. Club 33 Platinum members have access to another lounge at the resort. What is it called? Both of you confidently saying the 1901 lounge at the Carthay Circle. And the correct answer that I was looking for was the 1901 lounge at the Carthay Circle.
Woohoo!
So to answer your question, I think that they started 1901 as like for people who were on the waiting list for a long time for Club 33 that wanted to move up in the line, you could join 1901.
Oh, sure.
But as a platinum member, you could also go there.
Mm.
So it's not the original Club 33, but you still get that high-end dining experience.
Yes, yes.
And I'd also like to say I pulled up the Main Street train station, Vern, and the Main Street elevation is 138 feet. So that is where I got that number, which is what I was remembering.
So, okay. Yeah, so New Orleans is just a little bit higher.
Yeah.
That's why it always feels like I'm walking uphill to get from Main Street to New Orleans.
There you go.
And your fourth and final regular round question from listener Elise K. How long is the Pirates of the Caribbean Canal in feet? Tag said 3,000 feet, and Teresa said 4,000 feet. The correct answer that I was looking for was 1,838 feet.
We're terrible.
Sorry, Vern, can you repeat that? I could not hear you over Teresa's cackling.
The Pirates of the Caribbean Canal is 1,838 feet.
1838. We're double.
You should have flopped your elevation number down. It would have been closer.
I would have given you half credit for being that close.
There you go.
Had either of you guessed under 2,000, I would have given you half credit.
It just feels longer.
Yes. In a good way, though.
Yes.
Not bad way. It just Correct. Seems like it's a much longer ride. Wow. Wow.
Well, can we redeem ourselves with the bonus question?
And your bonus question tonight Maybe. From listener Finn C. Disneyland has many dedication windows on Main Street, but there are also some in other places in the park. In Frontierland, there is such a window. Can you name the fictional business and the person it is dedicated to? Both of you answering, Tony Baxter, and Tag not saying the business, but Teresa saying the excavation office. Tony Baxter's window is on Main Street. Mm. It's above the magic shop. It's Main Street Marvels. And it says Tony Baxter, inventor. The correct answer that we were looking for was Davy Crockett's Coonskin Hat Company, Fess Parker, proprietor.
Oh!
Fess Parker played Crockett in the 1954 Disney television shows.
And
on opening day in 1955, his appearance on horseback was a huge crowd pleaser. In 1991, Fess was named a Disney legend, and in 2004, on the anniversary of the Davy Crockett TV show, he was honored with his window.
Oh, that's... You know what's even worse? As soon as you said that, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that window.
I don't know if I remember the window specifically, but you said that, and I was like, well, that makes total sense.
When he's the Coonskin Cap Supply Co., I was like, oh, yes.
We didn't do very good this week, Teresa.
No, we did terribly.
People are going to stop listening. They think that we don't know what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fear... I've said this story so many times. I brought on like, oh, this will be great because we can show how knowledgeable we are. And it's just showing how we don't know all these things.
You know, no, I'm going to put the blame on James and me because we always have the outro of, do you have the question that can really stump them next time?
That's true. I mean, that's
true. Feel free to send that in to us.
They're challenging us.
And so the listeners have sent really good questions.
I like it, though.
It's not necessarily that you don't know. It's just that our listeners are that smart.
But look at how many things we learn. Don't ask me how many things I remember, but look at how many things we've learned.
I mean, and I think, yeah, I think if we ever did like a... Oh, God, I shouldn't even utter this because I feel like somebody will be like, that'll be really cool. If we were to like edit all of our trivia segments together, like somebody could just listen to hours of Disneyland trivia.
That would be really cool. You should do that.
5 years worth of Disneyland. Well, maybe it wasn't all the way to the start
it started,
of 5 years.
It started in like episode 45 or something
still,
like that.
Like,
yeah.
That's a lot of episodes.
It is.
Yep.
Well, are you going to ask them to stump us again?
I was just going to say, well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you have that perfect question that you've just been dying to hear asked on the air? And you've got a really good stumper that you want to hear? Well, feel free to send that in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Thank you to our editor, Sadell.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.